Yesterday was such a big day, such a big feast, that we're still benefiting from it. It was a big day for many reasons. Of course, it was the solemnity of the Immaculate Conception, but it was also a national holiday, and it was also our foundation day, our 48th anniversary. I reflected in my homily yesterday about the historical aspect of what God is doing, and then the kind of super historical. What I didn't mention is that even when God is intervening directly, even when a supernatural thing takes place, it often takes place in a very small, hidden way. The Immaculate Conception, which we reflected on yesterday as just a stupendous, brilliant miracle, a new creation, it was completely unnoticed when it happened. So small, so hidden. And this is part of what we experience when we reflect on the ways of God. It's certainly part of the Advent Christmas experience. Here we are in a season of preparation, a season of welcoming the coming of the Lord. But we know that he comes in such humble ways, such hidden ways. When Jesus was born, almost nobody knew that the Son of God had taken on flesh and had come into the world. Almost nobody knew it. So we have this combination of just extraordinary, unspeakably great things and tiny ordinary things. And they go together. That is how God works. This comes up in today's readings as well. I was reflecting on this prophecy from Isaiah. And Isaiah, in this section, combines kind of ordinary things with extraordinary things. He's talking about when the Messiah comes. When the Messiah comes, you won't have to weep. You'll have bread and water. You'll have the bread you need and the water for which you thirst. Well, that's pretty ordinary, bread and water. It's a good thing to have, but it's not something that strikes us as being super abundant. But then he goes on to say, no longer will your teacher hide himself, the teacher being the Messiah, or God himself. It's hard to know exactly what Isaiah had in mind, but certainly a figure who represents God. He will not hide himself. God will not hide himself, but with your own eyes you shall see your teacher. Now, that's what happened when Jesus came, but a lot of people didn't recognize him as the divine teacher. And then he goes on to say, you'll have rain, and you'll have wheat, and you'll have flocks, lambs, and oxen, and asses, and things that are kind of images of ordinary life. But then they get bigger and better. There's going to be so much for the livestock to eat that you'll have shovels and pitchforks full of it, and then every mountain and hill will be running with fresh water. And then he goes, it gets bigger, see. The light of the moon will be like that of the sun. Well, the sun is so bright that you can't even look at it. So if that were shining at nighttime, it would be daytime. And the light of the sun will be 7 times greater, like the light of 7 days. Well, that would be painfully intense. That would be too much to have the sun 7 times brighter. But this is, like I was saying yesterday, this is what happens when God enters into creation. It's just too brilliant to see it all, to take it all in. Blindingly bright. In the gospel, Jesus, the fulfillment of the prophecies, is walking around Galilee, teaching like all the rabbis did, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, which went beyond what the rabbis did, and curing every disease and illness, which no rabbi did. Nobody was curing people and driving out demons. So he's this combination of a divine power, divine presence, and seemingly ordinary human activity. And Jesus himself acknowledges a limitation on his power. He says there's a great harvest here, and there's not enough people to gather it all in. There's not enough workers. So it's as if he were saying he can't do it all. Now, of course he can do it all. He's God, he can do everything. There's no limitation on divine power. He's creator. He sustains everything in being. There's no limit. It's infinite power. So when Jesus says he can't do it all, he's referring to human limitation. And he does have that. When he takes on a human nature, it's a human nature that has limits because that's the way human nature is. It's a funny thing that God, who wants to restore everybody, he wants to restore all creation back to a perfection. In fact, he wants to enhance it with a perfection even greater than at the beginning. He doesn't just do it. And this is what we experience. God doesn't just do everything all at once, even though he could. There's a mystery in why he does it that way, but part of the mystery is he doesn't want us only to be recipients of his great work. He wants us to be part of it. He wants us to be free participants. So he summons his 12 disciples and he says, basically, the work that I've been doing, preaching, healing, driving out demons, I want you to do that same work. Go out and heal people and drive out demons. Go out and raise the dead and cleanse lepers. Now, we've heard these Gospels before, so it doesn't sound so strange to us. But imagine if you were one of the 12 and Jesus said to you, go out there and cure lepers. Go out there and raise the dead. Wouldn't you say, wait a minute, I can't do that. I'm a human being. I can't do divine actions. Wouldn't that be the natural reaction? You say, "What? Well, you're telling me to do something I can't do." And this is what God does. He's always calling us beyond our human limitations. Not that he's making it humanly possible for us, but he's giving us a share in his own divine life, his own divine power. That's grace. He does want us to share in divine life. Of course we don't have it. Of course we don't deserve it. Of course we don't have that capability unless we receive it from him. And that's the whole point. This is the last line of the gospel. Without cost, you have received free gift. Without cost, you are to give. So what you receive, give. This is exactly how the spiritual life works. We always receive first. Otherwise, we wouldn't have anything. But if we want to thrive, we have to give what we receive. What we receive, we give. If we hold on to what we receive, we lose it. If we give it, we have more. It's the spiritual life. Okay, so that's what's happening here. And this is an Advent message to us. What we receive, we give. What we're receiving is not only natural gifts, which we all have from birth and from our nature and from our parents and our culture, but we have much, much more by faith. That's what we heard in yesterday's second reading, that God has given us in Christ. He made it possible for us in Christ to be holy and without blemish, immaculate. That's the power of grace. Now, as I say, if we were among the 12, we would say, well, we can't do that. And this is the right reaction of everybody whom God calls. I'm not worthy. I can't do it. But when God reassures us and says, well, I'm not asking you to do it by yourself. I'm asking you to use the gifts I'm giving you. Then we're supposed to say, yes, Lord. That's the right answer. It's the wrong answer to say, no, I can't do it. No, I don't have the qualifications. You better choose someone else. That's the natural first reaction, but it's not the right answer when Jesus reaffirms his decision to send us out. Today's saint is a great example of this, Saint Juan Diego, the visionary of Our Lady of Guadalupe. He was an ordinary man. He was 57 years old. He was probably unnoticeable. And he's just walking along, and Mary shows up and says, I want to have a chapel here. Well, what's he going to do? Go to the bishop, she says, and tell him I want a chapel here. Well, he does go to the bishop because he's a humble, obedient man. And the bishop ignores him because he's just an ordinary person without any qualifications. So what does Juan Diego say to Mary when he sees her the next time? You better send somebody else. I'm obviously not the one who can convince the bishop. And Mary says, no, you are the one. You're the one whom God has chosen for a special mission. And so Juan Diego, he goes again, and we know what happens. He receives this miraculous image of Our Lady herself on his ordinary piece of cloth that he happens to be wearing. So it's one of these examples of divine power and ordinary humanity, of God at work, in this case through Mary, and just an ordinary person who accepts the grace. And Juan Diego, for the rest of his life, gave what he received. Without cost you have received, without cost you are to give. Juan Diego knew very well that what he received was a gift. It had nothing to do with him, his qualifications. It had all to do with what God wanted to give to his people, so he gave what he received. That's what everybody's supposed to do. That's what we're all supposed to do. Now, we might not see Mary. We might not have Mary imprinted on our clothes. We might feel like we haven't received very much, but that's wrong, because we have received the gift of faith. We have, not only do we have the bread for which, the bread we need and the water for which we thirst, but we have the bread of life, the Eucharist. So we have more than we could possibly take in, and we have more to give than we can possibly imagine. It doesn't change our littleness. It doesn't change our ordinary humanity. It's the divine way of using earthen vessels to carry divine realities. So get used to it. That's how God works. He chooses unlikely people to do his great work. And that's all of us. And he's working in all of us and through all of us to make his life, his kingdom known to the world.